Hi, and welcome to Shifter's podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk with Audrey Camp. She has been vital in building organizational structure, processes, and culture in Cognite. And now she runs her own consultancy, helping other companies thrive. Welcome, Audrey.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So who is Audrey Camp?
You know, when I was working at Cognite, I would often define myself by that job. I loved that job. And there I grew very much from a marketing role into an internal communication into an organizational development role. But over the last year, I've stopped defining myself by my work. So who I am, I'm someone who is very passionate about outcomes. I like to make the people and community around me better. And the way that I do that with companies is that I arrive with communication as a lens, and I treat every workplace challenge I find as a communication exercise. For me, I'm a rock climber, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a friend and a sister. And I do define myself by those things first. My writing is my vocation and communication is my passion. So I love using those things in my work, but always toward the outcome of the companies that I work with. And I like that I'm able to divide myself by those passion areas again. But I'm excited to talk about the Cognite journey as examples of some of this work. And so thank you for having me in to talk about it.
It's interesting that your background is in communication. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to a lot of leaders, and what everyone says is that communication is the most important part. Mm. Like communication, communication, communication. Why is that so important in leadership?
So communication is one of those things that we all do all the time, every day, whether we're good at it or not, whether we're thinking about it or not. And communication is a skill that we don't always think about building. I came up as a writer. I studied some journalism. I studied some pre-law. I studied history. I was a teacher of literature. So I have all of that stuff in my background. What makes me a communication pro is that when I came to Norway in particular and I started working with larger companies, what I found was that there are a lot of really bright, motivated people who have great ideas, but they're not sure how to get those ideas across. And communication is not just dispelling information. Communication is whether the thought you have lands the same way in the person across from you in their head. And so when you have successful communication, that person understands you. That's always an outcome. With work, with companies, this is hugely important, because if you're trying to achieve something as a group, then the leader has to be able to take the idea in their head and have it show up the same way in the heads of the people around them. That doesn't mean agreement, but it does mean understanding. So communication is a hugely powerful skill to enable collaboration, to make sure that people feel like they can safely challenge your idea and make it better. That's also a communication challenge. And it's about whether or not we can enjoy working with each other. One thing about working in highly international environments is people are often working in languages not their own, in the second, third, or fourth language. So having communication skills, those are principles, no matter what your mother tongue is, that you can use in order to make sure that you are actually understanding the person across from you and they're understanding you. So communication isn't just about speaking, it's about listening, which is also a huge leadership skill. So I think that for me, when I think about communication, as people do, they invoke it a lot. They're like, this is really, really important. But what they're saying is, you know, often, someone who's really good at speaking on stage, or someone who's really good at answering a question, articulating something. That's true. But the really great communicators are excellent listeners, and they're also the ones who really pay attention to the outcome. Are the people around me understanding what I'm saying? So that's, to me, why it's so important for companies to keep communication as a focal point.
Yeah. So communication is more than speaking on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Would you consider communication like the most important super skill a leader can have?
I think it's the most important skill anybody has. I think everyone has the capacity for leadership inside them. And if you are the person in the room who can understand the people around you and what they're trying to achieve, and if you can be the one who expresses yourself in a way that everyone can understand, you often become the leader. That's been my personal experience. And I've also seen it in the lives and habits and behaviors of the people around me. People who don't often think of themselves as leaders because they're not the loudest in the room, but they are the most thoughtful, and they do take into account the different viewpoints around the table. They seek out voices that are not being heard and make sure that they distill them into one idea. Those are the folks who really end up leading the day, or at least influencing an outcome.
Yeah. So in your perspective, what does a great company look like?
Ooh, that's a good one. So for me, the best companies are the ones that they have a true vision. They understand exactly what they're out to do. They can imagine the world in a way in the future that they want to be a part of changing and improving. And so they're very visionary, highly innovative, creative, working together, lots of collaboration, very healthy collaboration, and every person within the organization understands their connection to it. So these are some of the ways that when I'm evaluating culture, when I visit, I say, okay, you know, so the leaders seem to have a good handle on what they're trying to set out to do. Does every single person know how they fit in this puzzle? And in smaller companies, that should be easier, but is often overlooked. People sort of make assumptions and nobody wants to be the one who doesn't really understand what's going on. So that's what I'm looking for, is that everyone is pulling toward the same target. And I'm also looking for places where behaviors are both respectful, but safe and challenging. You want people who are constantly pushing for better. I love finding people who in a company can say, we're doing the best we can today and we can do better tomorrow. That's to me a really healthy company, and that can be, it's independent of size and independent of industry.
Yeah. So independent of industry, could you have this mindset also in, let's say, companies in the industries that are dependent on people doing like a specific job, not actually being very innovative?
Yeah. And I think that what's interesting there is that, you know, it takes all kinds of people in the world, right? So if you have a company where you have people working on smaller sort of focused tasks and they don't need to be highly creative and innovative in that moment, that doesn't mean that that person doesn't need to be creative and innovative someplace in their life. So understanding who you've hired, making sure you have the right person in the right role, is really important. If you have people suffering in those roles who want to grow and want to be more creative, then you don't have a healthy culture. You've got somebody who's sort of dwindling away and is not going to reach their potential. So I think that you can have a really fantastic culture where not every individual has to be highly creative in their role, but you should know whether or not that person needs that for their own personal sense of reward. Okay. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes. So let's try to make this awesome company.
Yeah, let's do it.
So what do we start with? Do we start with goals and vision, or sorry, vision and mission?
Yeah. I mean, as part of my work, I work with a company and an organization called Corporate Spring. And one of the things that we do is we say we should start with the vision and the mission and the purpose. So this is, what is the company all about? What is their sense of identity? What is their why? And this is something that if we're building a company from the ground up, you can have a great idea for a technology, or you can have a great idea for a service. You can have these great ideas, but why are you coming together to deliver them is a really essential question to building a healthy culture that's going to thrive beyond sort of any initial enthusiasm. It's like a love relationship. When you fall in love with somebody, right, you have all that immediate enthusiasm. You're going to see them all the time. You're going to talk about them all the time. They are on your mind 1,000%. Well, that goes away over time. If you want to have like that strong relationship where you still are moving toward the same goal, you have to start with a vision that the why and the purpose really resonate personally with everybody on the team.
But a lot of people, there are a lot of companies who don't have this very explicitly.
Yeah.
And what do they do? Do they like, can they start to create a why when after they've launched?
Yes, that's the good news, right?
Yeah, okay. And wouldn't that be alienating some of your employees, for example?
It could. I suppose that's a challenge. But one of the things that when I walk into a company that hasn't established a vision yet, at least not in an articulated way, or they had one a long time ago and they haven't revisited it, right? You can go back and find it. And I suggest that you do, because having that sense of purpose and vision should be influencing who you hire. You want people who are truly committed to that goal. You'll have, there are studies that show this, you'll have more effective collaboration, you'll have more efficient work, you'll have higher productivity and higher return on investment in terms of profit if you have a workforce that's highly engaged and motivated. So what I say to that, to a company that's like, ooh, we know we haven't looked at this in a while, it feels like a place we want to go, but what if we alienate some of our current staff members? And what I would challenge them back is, try not to think about it as alienation. Try to think about it as, are these folks in the right place? And I think it depends on your bandwidth and whether or not you have the vision to see what you're investing in. There would be a transformation and a change. There will be people who don't agree maybe with the why and are going to go seeking a different why someplace else. That's okay. So you might set yourself up for hiring new, different people with a perspective that you would have missed out on otherwise if you didn't establish that why.
So what does a why look like? For example, in Cognite, what did it look like there?
So the why at Cognite pardon me, the Wyatt Cognite was established by the founding team even before I got there. And then we used it in the building of our narrative over time. So this was about envisioning an industrial future that was powered by data and algorithms, freeing human creativity for greater pursuits to shape the world. And that idea of freeing human creativity was very important to people. That idea of using the data that we already had in intensive industries like oil and gas and energy and power and utilities to be better already with the data we have so that we can be more creative about how we deliver power in a grid, for example. This kind of thing was very motivating to people. But it was there from, I would say, the core team of about 40. They sat down and really looked at that. I think the founders already had it in mind, but they paid attention to the people who were on that initial team and made sure that they all influenced how it came together. And it became part of our storytelling, and we touched on it in every opportunity. And so that was hugely important to us.
It's a form of like catalyzing human creativity.
Yes. And the most important part about a vision is that you cannot do it yourself. So your company will not achieve the vision on its own. When we said that the industrial world should be powered by data and algorithms and free human creativity, we didn't just mean Cognite. Yeah. We meant all of the players. We meant all of these big companies. But we would play a role in that. We could help them achieve that. And that allowed us to find our mission.
When I hear like a mission or a vision like that, I have this... and don't be offended. I have this fluffometer.
Yeah, absolutely.
which goes off because in some of the mission and visions I've read are really, I don't know, they look nice on mm-hmm. paper, but it seems like a euphemism in yeah. terms of what we actually do. How do you manage to stay authentic?
Yeah. So this is culture work. And this is why I'm so passionate about this, because, culture is a set of beliefs and values and attitudes and norms and behaviors and standards that exist whether or not you pay attention and whether or not you articulate it. Your vision and mission don't need to be there, but your culture will grow around whatever you have.
Yeah.
So one of the ways that you stay authentic is to keep checking in with it. So with the vision, if you come up with that as a founding team and then you don't touch it again for 3 or 4 years, yeah, probably nobody knows about it. They're not inspired by it. And if you try to kind of lay it on afterwards and wrap what you've built inside of a vision, it won't feel authentic to people. And that's why you have to include your workforce in it. And, Cognite is an example of a company that went through hypergrowth in just 3 years, tripling in size. And that was one of those things where we had to constantly check in and say, is this still meaningful? And the way we did that was by building the vision and mission into touch points around, goal management, around onboarding for new Cogniters. We built it into organizational development activities. So whenever we had a chance, we would bring that vision back into the people, and it would be in an arena where people could challenge it, try to get it to grow again. And we would literally ask, do you feel connected to this vision or mission in employee surveys, for example? And so if you do that check-in and you're kind of holding on tightly but willing to let go lightly if something has changed and you're listening to your people, then you don't have the fluff-o-meter go off. And, working in technology, work with a lot of engineering folks, and engineers love them. They have a high fluff-o-meter. It goes off really fast. So for me, I definitely would work alongside people who were sort of like, I don't care about the vision right now. That's not something that matters to me at all. But I needed to still make sure that those folks felt their connection of their work to what we were trying to achieve as a company. And we would do that through goal management. We would make sure that the goals were something that inspired them, that something that was closer sitting to them. But the goals still had to be connected to our vision and our mission.
So let's say you have this mission. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between vision and mission?
Absolutely. So the vision itself is sort of that improved sort of ideal vision of the world that you want to inhabit eventually. That's the future. It's something that you and your company cannot achieve on their own, but you want to work with partners and customers who are trying to achieve a similar or the same vision. The mission is the part that you play. So the way, for example, if we have this vision of an industrial world that can be powered by data and algorithms and free human creativity, the part that Cognite was playing was developing a data platform that would allow customers and users and algorithms to find that data meaningful and to use it in action. So we said, you know, this is about the platform that we were putting together. It's about applications that could plug into it. It's about the user interface with the data. That's the role that we play in achieving that vision. So that's the big difference. The mission is much more actionable. You can tell whether or not you're achieving it. The vision is something that you say, my mission is connected to achieving that vision.
So let's say your vision is a fossil-free world.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mission is to create charging stations for electrical vehicles.
Exactly. Or even installing more electrical vehicle chargers within the grid.
Yeah.
Or having a more sustainable grid, or making sure that things are affordable. Yeah. So it can be all these different parts to play. The person who develops the app, the person who builds the car, the person who builds the charging station.
Yeah. So a lot of different missions for different companies can have like different missions, but working on the same vision.
Okay. Exactly. And this is where the coordination of goals, you can see if you want to be able to take on a huge problem, climate change, these other things that are sort of daunting to us, well, then immediately we say, as a group, we have to have a collective set of goals. And you see those in the Sustainable Development Goals, for example. But when you have companies that come alongside one another and you're saying, we want to achieve something that is groundbreaking, innovative, profitable, we want to take up this market share, we want to compete, you know, that's a really important thing for them to keep in mind. But you want that to be operating alongside companies that have similar vision so that you can achieve it together. Otherwise, that competition starts to work against itself and you don't actually achieve the vision. So this is one thing that I would talk to John Marcus Larovic about. He was our founder and our previous CEO at Cognite. And he was a big fan of this idea of co-opetition, this idea that competition and cooperation could be in the same pool. And this is where having a mission that is articulated and well known in the public can allow companies to come alongside each other and say, even if we're competitors in one way, we're trying to achieve the same thing. And that's something that I think Norway was really ripe for 5 years ago when I first started working with Cognite. So we got to see some of that happen with our customers.
And there, this is where I have a small problem, because you don't want your competitor to succeed. Like, so how much is vision and how much is actually you wanting to build successful companies which crushes your competitors?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, and this is where I don't want to play in a pool that's not my own. But one of the things that I think about culture is that, and I'm a very competitive person, like, do not go up against me. I'm extremely competitive. But when I see companies who are so focused on beating competitors, often I see that there's a focus that is away from what is the thing that you're building.
Yeah.
So I find that competition can sort of can sharpen the blade, but that you still want the blade to be working for you.
Yeah.
And that's where really understanding your vision and mission, who you are, your identity, your purpose is super essential to building a culture that's trying to achieve something and not trying to keep others from achieving the same thing. You know, the beauty is that a lot of it in a very competitive marketplace, the beauty is that we often do achieve great things as a society because of competition. But if everyone's out there just looking over their shoulder trying to stop someone else, then we actually don't achieve the best idea. And that's, you know, I won't play in that water too much, but that's something that I really believe in.
Yeah, I don't think any great company was built on trying to beat someone.
No. It's built on a great idea,
yeah.
And probably having the better vision and mission that brings the talent away from their competition, as opposed to actually trying to outmaneuver somebody. So that's also something that if you have a really clear vision and mission, and this is shown over and over in research, that you have a better employer brand, you tend to bring more talented people on board. And then you don't have to be as concerned on the competitive edge because you've got the best people in your house.
So if you're a startup, what is an easy way to have a vision and mission?
Mm.
How would you set up a workshop to achieve that?
I love that question. So one of the things that you can do this on your own, you can bring in external help like me, but you can do it on your own. So one of the things that you do is you get together as a group and you say, you know, who are we today? And you really define, like, what are we about? What are the things that we believe in? What are the things that we assume? Who are our customers? You know, what do we say about ourselves? And then you put yourself in the mindset of somebody else, okay? You have to do this really fun role-playing exercise. And you say, if a new person joined our team today, what would they see? And you try to put yourself into that sort of play act. Would that person see those same behaviors and those same values and those same, would they understand the vision and the mission? And what you find if you do this the correct way is that the assumptions that you're making as an organization, even if you're quite small and you've been together a little while, is that there's too much that's being assumed. You aren't being clear about any of this, and you're not even necessarily on the same page. Do those activities blind. have people write their answers down. Don't allow groupthink around a table, right? And then share what you've actually written. What I find is when I'm in there and I facilitate this, and it really does help to have external eyes and voice in the room. When I facilitate this, people are often surprised by what the people around the table have said. And leaders tend to be more aligned than the rest of the people on the team. So you need to be open to that from the beginning. Don't expect everyone to come with the same answer. Use those surprises as opportunities to clarify something. And often leaders also have it wrong. So it takes a lot of humility.
Sorry, what was the question?
So if you ask yourself, for example, what is our product? It's usually an easy thing for people to answer. Yeah. What does our product do for our customers? Slightly harder question. What is the thing that will set us apart from our competition, for example?
Yeah.
But then you ask, who are we? What do we believe? Write down 5 words that, exemplify our company. You're going to get some words that are the same and some that are just out of left field.
Yeah.
And you need to be open to that. And when you have that word, say, can you give me an example? I was in a workshop where, we had some, I was a group of about 15 and there were people around the table. And one of them said, they were all saying, oh, trust. And they were saying, trust was a big one. They were saying self-motivation or something like that. And then somebody else said isolation. And everybody kind of turned and looked at that person. And he immediately was like, oh no, they're all looking at me. And because I was there, I kind of keep everybody like, so what do you mean by isolation? What is an example of that? And he said, well, we like to have focus time. But often that means that we don't reach out to one another when we really need each other. And that is a really vulnerable thing to share in a room. And you don't necessarily want isolation to just show up as an exemplary value for your company as a behavior. So that allowed leaders to say, okay, so then where did we go wrong between focus and isolation? And then they can jump in there and say, what we actually want is this. And that's where being outcome focused for a group, it's like, what do we really want? Your culture. You want people to collaborate when they need to collaborate. You want people asking for help. You want people to share what they've learned. But you can't have those things. You will have those things occasionally, organically. But if you pay attention to them, you can sort of set up some guidance or some structure around it so that it happens more predictably. And that's where you get values that everyone can agree on. And this is where, I would say for even small organizations, having a cultural touch point like an employee survey or something so that you can actually ask your people questions like this that are open-ended once a year, twice a year. And you'll see over time that changes. When you're a small company, it can be hugely influenced by the hiring of a single person, for example.
Yeah. But do you also, now we're touching upon values, which are really important and interesting in terms of culture. But if you go back to the vision and mission, how do you arrive at a concrete vision and a concrete mission?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing is to remember that there are no wrong answers from the beginning. You want to get lots of ideas on the table. And it really does help to have somebody who has a marketing or communications background in the room because they're the ones who can take lots of different ideas and find the core truth, a kernel within all of it and put it into an expression. And you would like it to be less than a sentence long, something that's memorable to you. So when you are sitting down and you have sort of, a brainstorming session after you've done the good work of who are we today? Who would somebody else see us as? The question really becomes, who do we want to be? Because a vision and a mission are both aspiring.
Yeah.
Once you've achieved your mission, then you need to move that goalpost a bit so that you can still be striving towards something. So the question is, who are we today? Who might somebody else see us as today? Who do we want to be in the future? And if that's where you take your product, your service, whatever you're creating, and you say, in the future, what will this do? And you start to, you have to live in this creative space where you're envisioning a future. You're playing pretend. What does that actually look like? And it really helps, again, not to have leaders changing the weather with their own ideas and sort of trying to influence what everybody else is thinking. So they need to be the quieter voices in the room. Sometimes it also helps, depending on the size of the team, not to have the leaders in the room for a while and to let people really put down their ideas. If you're talking to, you ask them questions like, if you're telling somebody across the table what you do for a living, what do you say? Well, what do you say to that person when they say, well, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
And I think that's where you go back to this, the Simon Sinek why, really drive that down. And that's, again, something where if you have a designer on your team, they're trained in design thinking, they've done user interviews. These are people who are excellent listeners and they're the ones who can drive you toward a why. So pull on the expertise you have in your own teams. Marketing communications is one. Design is another.
But do you like agree upon the vision and mission there at the workshop, or is that something do you just get input and then you work on it and then you give it back?
So I've done this in larger organizations and I've done it in smaller teams. And sometimes you really can find almost exactly what you want to say within a single, you know, 3 or 4 hour workshop. It depends on how well prepared you are in advance or how close you are to the origin of your company. If you're going retroactive with a few years of history, this can be harder to get to. And the larger organizations, of course, have bureaucracy. So what I would say is like count on doing ideation in a workshop space and having it be a really fun, engaging, and sometimes, you know, really taxing exercise because you're using muscles that you're not used to using. Be prepared to step away. I was reminded recently of this great set of like, what does good writing look like? If you're going to send a memo, what does it look like? And there was this one rule that said, you never send or publish the same day you've written it.
No, yeah.
So I highly agree with that. So if you come up with some great ideas in the room, step away. Take a couple days. Take a beat. Let people have feedback about it in that span and then revisit. And I think with cooler head and with input on it, then you can actually distill very quickly.
Yeah.
And it depends on how prepared the organization is to talk about their vision, to talk about their mission. And there are exercises that, you know, my counterparts and I would come in with that can help you get into that space. When you take people out of what they do every day, you know, at the keyboard, working on the thing, and you say, well, now we're going to have these imaginary, you know, forward-thinking exercises. It can sometimes backfire. They're not prepared, and then they don't come with their best ideas. So there are ways to warm that up. And that's usually the toolbox that I would bring to the table, for example.
Okay, warm that up in advance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you send them out some material that they can, okay.
Think about it this way.
What would that look like, for example?
So there are some different things. So one thing that you can do is send a pre-read that's about like what is vision and mission, just to get them to go through that. And a lot of times people will not read what you send them, and then that doesn't actually help. But the people who actually are highly engaged, they will. Other things you can do is do activities in the room that help people to sort of use different parts of their brain. So I will occasionally do like an improv exercise with people, or we'll do an icebreaker of some kind where they have to introduce each other. We can do one of my favorite activities is to do a round in the room where we identify the superpowers of the person sitting next to you.
Yeah.
Because that's something where it's like, even if you don't know that person well, you have to draw on what you know from that person. And it's a really interesting exercise because you are not introducing yourself anymore. You're introducing somebody else. And that allows you in your brain to shift the where you're actually being creative and to think about what you owe the person next to you. It's a psychological exercise to remind you that you're all in something together.
Yeah.
So those kinds
of really good exercise.
Some of those exercises are just really nice too to unite the group behind, again, the common purpose of the day. I'm a hugely objective the outcome focused person. So whenever we get into a room for a workshop with me, I always begin with, who are we today and what are we trying to achieve? And I will revisit that multiple times through the day.
Yeah.
And I encourage any company, small company leaders who are trying to do this themselves, remember to start with that outcome and to remind everybody the role that they play in that outcome, because that's how you unite a team behind a common goal, even just in the short term.
Yeah. So should this include all employees or just the leadership group?
I would never just include the leadership group, but at the same time, it's really important that the leaders understand who they are in this space. So depending on the size of the company, I'd say you can pull the leaders out and have them run this themselves as well, but never, never, never just pull from the leadership group. When you have a top-down formulated vision, mission, values, even goals, you lose the urgency and the ownership from the workforce.
Yeah.
If those words did not come out of their mouths, then they're not going to feel connected to it. And that's true whether or not their performance is based on the KPIs you come up with. At least psychologically, you know, they've shown this. Like there just isn't that sense of this is mine and I'm supposed to run after it.
Yeah.
So I would say you should develop the leaders, train the leaders, enable the leaders to be great in the room. That includes working on, you know, listening, working on how do you make sure that you get all of the feedback that you need, keeping people centered on the objective. I use my leaders when I go into places. I say, you know, it's not actually, I care what you think, but your role in this room is to make sure that everybody else in this room gets heard.
Yeah.
And that's really fun to see those leaders kind of put on that coat when they walk into the room. So you should definitely take them separately and aside if you have a large enough organization to enable them to do that. But the expectations for them are higher, and it's not that they're going to come up with all the good ideas.
we actually did that. We just came up with some values.
Oh, you did?
So, and these are our new values. And of course, it didn't
How'd
work.
How'd that go? Yeah.
No, not at all. So, okay, interesting. And then...
you can print those in fancy colors and put them on the wall.
So, we tried a bunch of things. So I don't know if we have any legitimate, clout inside our company anymore. So we're having a new workshop next Thursday.
Oh, good. Yeah. Do you have a facilitator for that workshop?
No, not yet. Maybe you should
come. You should call me.
Yeah. So, so I can write under that it's not a good idea to have everything sorted out.
Just like double underline that.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say you have the vision and then you have the mission, and now you can start working on the goals, right? Yeah. And then, because vision and mission are a bit abstract in a way, so it's concrete enough to understand what it is, but it's abstract because you don't have any like numbers or anything. So now so what does it mean for us in terms of like goals?
That's right.
So what is a good goal?
So, and this is something that I really believe in, and I've seen it work at Cognite and other places. So. Vision and mission are supposed to be there to inspire and push us and make sure that we're always, you know, striving towards something that's the same as a team. But how do we show that that's working? That's your goals. Execution in these companies, that's everything. So to make sure that you're doing the right thing, that the thing you're working on that day and the thing that you measure in 6 months connect to vision and mission, that's where you have your goals articulated. I tend toward OKRs, objectives and key results, as my method of choice, but it's just one of many goal management frameworks, and I encourage people to use the one that makes the most sense for them. But I'll use OKRs as my example today just because it keeps it easy. So what's nice about OKRs is that when you have an objective,
not everyone are familiar with OKRs.
Yes.
So what is the pitch for OKRs?
Happy to give it. So objectives and key results provide a framework wherein you come up with a very short set of aspirational goals that are stretch goals. This is keeping people aligned behind singular goals. And for any organization, I try not to have more than three. My favorite was going into a company that originally had five and they brought it down to one. I'm so psyched because objectives should be, this isn't your day-to-day work. This is about a step change. This is about accelerating something.
So what does a good objective sound like?
I mean, the most important thing about a good objective is that it is inspiring and memorable. And it's something that everybody understands when they read the expression. So for me, I can give you some examples of good OKRs, but I'll also just say OKRs are there to serve you. And one of the things I'm a big believer in is you should read John Doerr's book, Measure What Matters, and you should look at all of his good information on their website. And then also know that OKRs are there to serve you, and you can be flexible with the way that you run your system, the way that you run the process, the way you develop.
Isn't that like a prerequisite that you have to be flexible with it? You have to adapt it to your own organization. You can't just follow John Doerr's recipe.
I would hope that everybody understands that, but I also have met people who are just like, well, we can't use OKRs because it's rigid.
Yeah.
Or we tried that and it didn't work because our needs changed over the course of the year and we didn't update the goals. So there was just this huge gap. And I'm sitting there going, you should adjust your goals, right?
Yeah.
But this is not an assumption. So let's just remind everybody, be flexible with yourselves. It's there to serve you.
Okay. So you have the objectives, what you're trying to achieve.
And it's a destination.
Yeah. So that's the O in OKRs.
Objective. Did we get to that point in the distance?
Okay.
Right? The top of the mountain.
Yeah. So what's an example for a non-objective?
So this could be a big product release. Do we have, 3.0 of whatever we've got out there in the world?
Yeah.
That can be a stretch for somebody. If it doesn't stretch you, that shouldn't be your objective if you're going to achieve it anyway. So for some organizations, it can be around, we take up, 75% market share.
Yeah.
Ooh,
so it's actually something you can achieve, because that's the difference between a vision and a goal.
Oh, it definitely should be within your power to achieve it.
Yeah, within a certain time frame.
But it should stretch you.
Yeah.
So this is where it's about, it needs to be specific. This is the SMART, right? The specific, right? It needs to be measurable. Did we get from here to there and how do we know? It needs to be achievable, something that you actually can do. It needs to be realistic, but you need to stretch yourself. So with OKRs in particular, you say that 70% of that goal, if you hit 70%, is a win.
Yeah.
So really, you're not going to fall apart if you hit 70. That's still all greens across the board. But the goal itself should stretch you. It should be 30% beyond that, right? And psychologically, what you see is that when you have something that's that's aspirational like that, as long as the team is focused on it, they can push past and get there. And so you do have teams that will suddenly, they'll get to 80% when they wouldn't have if you hadn't asked for 100. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then the time-bound piece. That's
like aim for the stars.
Yeah, shoot for the stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I'll also just say, like, my favorite example of an excellent objective is if you go back to John F. Kennedy's speech, the President Kennedy in the States in the 60s, and he said, we're going to take a man to the moon and bring him back safely.
Yeah.
Right. So that was before the end of the decade was out. So that's a fantastic example of an objective. We're going to, very specifically, there's going to be a person who stands on the moon, and he's going to come back safely, and we're going to do that by the end of the decade. And the President of the United States said this, and he's not the head of NASA, but he says, we're going to do this thing together. And this is going to require all of us to pitch in all of these different ways. And from there, you look at, oh, well, then we need to achieve something mathematically and something technologically and something with the actual building of the vehicle. We have to train people. You know, there are all of these different pieces to that puzzle, but everyone understands we will be able to measure success by whether that person comes back safely.
Isn't there like a story about one, I don't remember, but one guy asked a janitor working at NASA, what's your job? And he said, putting a man on the moon.
That's right. And I think when everyone feels that aligned to your goals, you are winning as a culture. And that's that level of ownership as well. So I think, that metaphor of the of NASA falls short eventually, so I won't stretch it too far. But it's a really good one because this helps people to understand, oh, it's very aspirational, but it's also clear and it's simple.
Yeah.
If it's something that, you know, every single person can't call to mind, then you've already lost them.
Yeah.
So they need to be able to understand, like, that's the thing that we're
trying. But you said, for example, 75% market share.
Mm-hmm.
That has some competitor element in it, right?
Sure.
Because
it's
a market. Is that a good goal then?
That's a great question. So if I was sitting in a room and people were in a company that I didn't know well, but I was there to advise them, and they said, well, we want to be able to say that we take up this much market share by, you know, at state. And I would say, okay, well, how close are you to that now? You know, what are the challenges standing in your way? And I would evaluate that with them. And so if it felt like it was something that was out of hand, right, that there's other competitors who are actually coming closer to that goal, for example, I'd say, well, maybe we need to back that up a step and say, what is it that you can do to give yourselves that competitive advantage that you think you need and make that the objective instead? Because then that's more in-house, right? That's something where you can actually, increase functionality or do something with your sales or something else. And you can say, that's our measurable objective. So I would, it depends on, yeah. If I was talking to somebody about that, I would say, so tell me a little bit about the landscape.
Yeah.
Is it realistic? Is it achievable?
Yeah.
Would be my questions, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Okay. So you have the objective,
mm-hmm.
which is a stretchy goal.
Yes.
And then you have the KRs, which are the key results, mm-hmm. which are as measured by.
Exactly.
So so what are the numbers that would say that we have reached our goal?
Yes.
In attendance.
And it's numbers, but it's also, for example, so if we say, okay, we need to develop this new, we need to release this new functionality for our product. And that's an objective. And you say, well, then we need to understand, we need to create, three new things that our app can do.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that is one of the things you have to do, but you also need to understand what your users want and need most, right? So maybe back that up a step. Maybe that's a key result, understanding your users.
Yeah.
So it's milestones along the journey. So if the objective is the outcome, it's the top of the mountain, the key results are the waypoints along the way. So how far have we come? Do we have this knowledge in hand? Have we achieved this marker? Do we have these people on our team? Have we, are we working well with this partner? You know, whatever that other thing is that will help you to achieve it. And underneath key results are the output, the initiatives, tasks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes people get a little confused about that because they say, oh, I want my checklist of things we're supposed to do. Yeah. The things you're supposed to do, quote unquote, those are tasks. Those, you know, belong in those are Jira backlog. Those are things that your engineers are going to work on every day or.
Yeah. They don't have anything in the OKR system to do.
It's something that sits beneath it. And so they can be connected, but that's not the key result because results are also outcomes. Do we have this in our hand that we didn't have before?
So if you have the O's, the objectives, mm-hmm. the key results, and then you have the to-dos.
Yeah, initiatives or tasks.
Initiatives, to-dos.
Mm-hmm.
And those can change from week to week.
And they should.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. And this is where leadership really comes in, because you want your people to feel connected to your goals. In the development of the goals, their voice is very important. Leaders are the ones who have that higher level context and are supposed to be there to make sure that this is actually happening, that the rhythm of business is ensured. And this is where, if you have tasks, this is when you're defining your goals, you don't want to define your goals so carefully and so at such a granular level that there's no room to change. Because as you were saying before, like, we need to be flexible sort of inherently. So when you're setting up your goal, you say, this is the objective we need to reach. These are some of the key results we'll use to measure whether we're on the right track. But you, dear, you know, employee, team member, how will we achieve this? That's up to you. I want to know. And what do you think you need to be working on right now? And the leader shouldn't always have the right answer to that. We need to be paying attention to the people who are actually, you know, fingers on the keyboards, and they'll tell us, what do we need to work on first? Who do I need to work with? What are my biggest challenges? And that's where leadership around goals, the goals are there to enable good leadership.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be there to help you have the communication exercise with your employee. The what you're working on is less important than what are we trying to achieve and how are we achieving it? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. But I think also in terms of flexibility, cadence is something that you can be flexible on. Because you don't have to wait, because OKR, like John Doerr wrote it, happens in like quarter sprints, right? You have each quarter, we have a review of your OKRs.
So the traditional OKR structure is on a quarterly basis, and that includes defined goals for the quarter, defined objectives and key results for the quarter. So I've done that. I've worked in a quarterly framework. At Cognite, we actually did a more flexible model where we said we would do a six-month horizon, so biannual definition OKRs, and we used the quarters as more of a check-in. Are we still on the right path?
Yeah.
Do we need to change anything? And giving yourself that place where we actually say, are we on the right path? Do we change anything? That's that cadence or that touch point's predictable to allow yourself the flexibility to move a goalpost if you have to. What I'll also say, though, going back to my thing I want to beat down on here, that communication is culture. One of the things about OKRs that I love is that by having that framework, you give yourselves opportunities to communicate well with your workforce.
Yeah.
So for leaders, it's using the development of OKRs to connect to vision and mission. And it's using the review of OKRs to say, you know, how are we doing on this journey together? And being willing to be humble and transparent if things aren't working. So often people feel very performative around goals. They're like, oh, shoot, we're not getting there. You know, we're way behind. I don't want to talk to my workforce about that, or I don't want to hold that person accountable. These are tough conversations to have. The OKR framework, because it's set up in a way that is predictable, allows you these opportunities that aren't just you coming down on someone. It's within this context. This is what we do as a group. We look at our goals and we say, how far are we coming? And where are the hot spots? Where do we need to lean in more? I would work with our leaders at Cognite, for example, to develop the story that we tell about it. And it's never like, how do you PR your way around a poor showing? Mm. It's always, okay, so we're falling short of this goal. Is that because it was the inappropriate goal, the wrong goal? Is it because a challenge came up that we didn't know about? We should talk about that. What failed and what did we learn? And it gives you this point in time where everyone sort of stops and turns, and you get this chance to communicate with one voice. And this is what keeps you aligned.
But this is a really interesting and crucial point, I think, because the individual, maybe an individual manager, doesn't want to make any mistakes.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to deliver on the result. But the hard thing here is that you have to free yourself from this. It's not about you succeeding in a sense. It's about the process.
Yes.
It's about when things aren't working, how do we fix it? Mm-hmm. Instead of things aren't working, you don't work as a manager.
That's right.
We ever work out as manager. So, and this is really difficult. How do you make this a system that aligns with the individual incentives in terms of not wanting to fail?
Yeah. And this is, again, communication is culture. What do we celebrate? What do we recognize? Leaders are the ones who demonstrate these behaviors. So when you're setting up an OKR process for the first time, it's good to have these things in mind. Think about, what are you going to do when someone's falling short on their goal?
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
Think about it in advance. Yeah. Don't get to that point and then suddenly react, because that's unfortunately an example of someone who's not prepared and then your character shows up. Yeah. It's really important to think about that as a team. If you have your vision and your mission and your values in place in advance, those values will help you decide on your behaviors. We had a wonderful value on the obligation to speak up was a value at Cognite for a long time. And that was a really interesting value because it was about people raising their hands with questions, people raising their hands with challenges, people giving kudos was also part of speaking up. And this value allowed us to say, you know, accountability is really important and ownership is really important. We're going to recognize and reward people who will raise their hand and say, this is a problem.
Yeah.
If you know that as part of your values in advance, then when you get to that point in the process where somebody's falling a bit short, they're less scared of being the one who everybody's looking at because they're also willing to raise their hand and say, hey, look over here, something's not working. And I think that that's where the OKR framework gives you that opportunity to say, who are we going to be in that moment in advance and sort of train for it and set those expectations for leaders.
Okay, so let's say you don't have this value.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, how do you, okay, so a leader doesn't meet his results or her results.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make this a constructive process in terms of, you know, making tweaks to reach the goal instead of, so how do you act as a, how do you act?
So this is something where, and this is not a part of the John Doerr methodology. I think maybe they do something similar to it now, but we trained at Cognite, for example, we trained OKR coaches. We actually would train a group of people who were just from all different levels of the organization, different parts as coaches around the process. And so those folks would be ones who could come alongside someone and say, ah, okay, we see at this review point, this goal is not, you know, up to snuff. We're not on track. Let's talk about why, and let's talk about whether or not we need to change something. And here's what I'll also say. Depending on the size of your organization, it can be really tempting to have OKRs at every single level. You don't need to do that, especially when you're adopting it the first time. I loved having company level OKRs and division or department level OKRs. In the teams, if teams felt mature enough to have OKRs of their own that were connected, love that. But it doesn't need to be required because that level of like of process can actually start to break at some point. You need that flexibility. So you decide for you. But if you have a leader who is struggling with a group to achieve an OKR, you need to make sure that you have some transparency on why. And this is where you make sure that within the process of review, you're asking good open-ended questions. You're not asking, what did you do wrong? And you're not asking, like, who's failing over here? You enter with curiosity. This is why I love curiosity as a value.
And you exit with the firing, no.
And this is like, this is what everybody's afraid of. And I think, and this is what we say about healthy cultures, right? So what does psychological safety even mean? It doesn't mean that everybody is, you know, wrapped in bubble wrap and everybody gets, and nobody ever gets fired or their feelings hurt. What it means is that in almost all occasions, people are going to be respected.
Yeah.
And that there's not going to be knee-jerk reactions. There will always be due process, due diligence. There will always be an opportunity for people to speak up for themselves. And that we reward both success in the more, you know, expected or traditional sense, and the people who say, along the way, we fell short and we learned something.
Yeah.
When you have a culture that will say, I know this is going to be a really tough time for this team over here. They've set a really ambitious target for themselves. Let's keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
In the process of developing that goal, you identify dependencies. You say, one of my favorite things in evaluation of OKRs is asking, who do you need to work with in order to achieve this?
Yeah.
Who are you most likely not going to be able to get their time? Asking those questions as you develop your goal can help to ease some of that. But then you also know as leaders, they told me that this was going to be a challenge. I suspect that there's something breaking down in that collaboration. And as a leader, you can walk in and say, so tell me, what's challenging you right now? What is the obstacle in between you and this goal? And they might say, you know, hey, I got resources pulled off of my team that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Well, that's out of their hands. So what can you do as a leader in that moment? That's not on them. That's for you to come alongside and say, let's own this together. Let's adjust that goal.
Yeah.
And I think that that's where having this, a framework of quarterly or a cadence of quarterly touch points gives leaders the opportunity to behave the way they want to behave so that they're not always reactive. They're being proactive about it.
Yeah. Would it be safe to say that if you're not learning anything, then you're failing?
I mean, I would say that.
Yeah. I mean, like so that has to be the goal. So even if you're, because it's not about success or failure,
mm-mm,
it's about learning.
Yeah.
You know, if you're succeeding, you're learning why you're succeeding. if you're failing, you're learning why you're failing. So learning is actually the most important part of an OKR.
And that brings up something really lovely around OKRs that that people don't always take advantage of. You might have OKRs in your organization right now, and you are missing an opportunity for organizational development. So what questions are you asking in the development of goals? And what questions are you asking in the evaluation of goals? Yeah. In those touch points, you can have things around, you know, what do you expect to learn in this process?
Yeah.
That allows people to shift into, ooh, you know, professionally, I can develop myself this way. Or I have somebody on my team who's been wanting to try this different, you know, language out. I should give them an opportunity to do that in line with this goal. You know, we get on autopilot, we get into the grind, we're all performing so hard, you know, we don't necessarily give ourselves the bandwidth to make those decisions and be proactive on our own. Having the framework, as long as you set up your process correctly, having those questions around learning, both in the driver's seat of like, I'm setting a goal, what do I expect to learn? What's something I don't know today that I need to know to achieve it?
Yeah.
What a great question. And then you can start to set up plans around that for the course of the quarter or the semester. On the other end of it, you know, what did we learn as a group? And asking that in a group situation where you're not just speaking it out loud in a setting, but you're actually thoughtfully writing it down and then reading what you've written to one another. I mean, you'll find individual lessons all around the table that are different, and you'll find collective lessons, which are fantastic for the rest of the organization to know.
Yeah.
And at the risk of talking too much, can I say something really quick on top
sure,
of that?
Go ahead.
And that is that organizational learning is about developing your narrative as a company, the story that you're telling about yourselves. You know, we talk to startups sometimes and they're like, I'm always building the plane as I'm flying it. That's true. You're also writing your story as you're living it. And people forget to do that. The OKR process is one way, that framework is one way to develop that narrative over time. You keep that solid vision and mission. That's not changing. That's your guiding star, your North Star. But who have we been over the last 6 months?
Yeah.
I will use that cadence to give our organizations touch points for communication. Leaders coming in and saying, let's tell the story of the last 6 months.
Yeah.
That shows up in your goals. It shows up in what you learned. It shows up in who joined your team and why. And so we would use those to create the stories that people can remember and be excited about. And it helps to have that cross sense of we achieved this together when you tell the stories from around a larger organization. Because it's invisible. People are sitting in their corner doing their thing, and they miss that the sales team did this rocking thing. They miss that the engineers, you know, got rid of all this technical debt. Nobody cares about that. They should care about that, and we can tell a story about it if it aligns with our goals. What did that allow us to achieve? And that's where, again, leaders have this obligation, and communication is such an important skill, to tell the story of the org as it grows. And I loved working on that at Cognite. I do a bit of advising on that now with other clients, and I use goal management to help them understand, what did we do for 6 months? Who are we today that we weren't 6 months ago? That's a fun story to tell.
Yeah, because when you have the goals, you create the called the frame of the book. You create the outline of the book.
Yes.
And then, you know, the actual stories are the actual, so the actual experiences will be the stories in this framework.
Perfect. And that's where you have the outline, you have your chapters, you have your sections, you have your characters.
And just fill it in.
You fill it in.
Yeah. And no answer is wrong, actually, because what happened, happened.
What happened, happened. And I think that when people stop being afraid of what happened, happened, and instead say, what is the story that we tell about this so that we understand who we are better, so that we're better equipped for the next 6 months?
Yeah.
That's where the power comes.
We need to talk a little bit more about communication. But firstly, I don't have any data to back this.
Okay. I'm ready for a hot take.
But most companies fail with OKRs.
Yeah.
It's a super simple framework, but still they fail.
Yes.
Why do they fail?
Yeah. In my opinion, and again, I don't have a ton of data to back this up either, but in my opinion and based on what I've witnessed, OKRs fail because people feel either that it's too rigid for them, and they're just like, ooh, we're too flexible. We need to grow. We need to do these things. And they don't take the time to say, oh, I should adapt this process to my needs. And also because an OKR framework, even though the idea is simple, the framework is something that if you don't have expertise in that area, it's easy to sort of drop important components. So it can be really helpful to have somebody coach you through your first year or something so that you actually can succeed with it around one revolution. You know, we talk about these flywheels. once you have a process that's pretty well set up for yourself, then it starts to become, this is a ritual. This is predictable. Everyone understands, now I'm going to have an OKR check-in. I know where that spreadsheet is. I know what my process is like. But the first few times you do it are really tough. And if you don't have people who have the bandwidth to do it, like someone like me on an HR team, you know, or a leader who's involved with, for example, corporate development, you know, you can have that person do it. But if that's not their full day job, then they don't commit their full mentality to it in both of their hands.
I think this is really a super important part.
Yeah.
You need to have someone own the OKRs inside the company. Like, I mean, literally working on this.
And it's the process, and then it's the ownership of the goals themselves. So if a team has a set of OKRs,
yeah,
but nobody's name is on the objective to speak for it,
yeah,
then you've already lost.
Yeah.
So it's ownership on all sides. And
okay, so you put a name on an objective?
So we did at Cognite, and I recommend it now in any client that I go into, and it seems to be working really nicely. And the important thing there is that you have an owner for the objective. You have an owner for each of the key results underneath it.
Yeah.
Those people should be different.
Yeah.
And those people need to know that ownership, and we are very clear about this in the way we define it, ownership there is not you are measured by whether this succeeds or fails. Oh. Your job is to ensure the rhythm of business and to be the one who puts up the hand to say something's not working,
yeah,
or to be the one who tells the story when it does, yeah, or to speak to the lessons learned.
You're sort of policing the...
You're a spokesperson.
Spokesperson, yeah.
Yeah, I would leave police out of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's not make it scary.
No.
but I think being a spokesperson, being the person who we expect you to advocate for the people underneath this goal, how are they all working together? Do you need resources? You're the one who raises that hand.
Yeah.
And by having somebody's name on it...
Has anyone ever said that they need less resources?
Literally no one has ever said that. Please take some of my people, they say.
Yeah.
No. But I think that that's where, you know, people will come up with excuses why things don't work. But that's where really good leaders can look past the expected answers to say, but what really, what is challenging to you on this? And why didn't this work? But having that one person who can come in and do some reporting, and it's where, you know, how do you set up your process? Having that expertise to at least set it up in a way that works for you and your organization. Don't assume that the standard is the way you have to run it, especially for smaller teams. Like, do you need to have this constant reporting and developing of goals, or can you extend that a little bit? You know, I think people need to be willing to be flexible. But when you aren't familiar with something, it's scary. You don't want to do it wrong.
No.
You don't want to ask people to adopt something that you're about to drop. So, yeah.
So you mentioned a coach. You're also a coach.
Yes.
Yes. So what does that look like if you have like a coach the first year?
Yeah, and if you want to have somebody in-house who this becomes part of their job description, being an OKR coach. So you're the person who understands the methodology the best. You're the person who understands that there are different ways to apply it, but really it's outcome focused even there. So that person becomes the one who is asking really great open-ended questions, but they're also the person who is the most organized. They're going to be the ones who make sure that if you have transparent reporting using an application, or you have some other set of, you know, reports that you generate yourself manually, that person is in charge of those. And they're the person who gets to, again, help define those goals. And being a person who helps define goals, I don't have to know anything about your business, and I will help you define far better goals than you will in a vacuum, because I'm going to come in with questions. Often the question is why.
Yeah.
And then it will be about whether or not it looks like a good objective. Is this something that follows that SMART methodology? Is this specific and measurable and achievable and realistic and time-bound? Then it's like, that's something that I can help to measure you on that you can't measure yourself on as well. But somebody within the organization can train to do that for you. So if you give somebody that responsibility, let them develop that skill set as well, and be that person who can ask really challenging questions to leaders.
But is this a full-time job for a startup?
Definitely not, no. Right? It's going to be just another hat that somebody owns.
Yeah.
But if you have somebody who is... I was about to define a candidate, and I was like, now I'm just describing... Like, you're going to think I'm describing myself.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. You want somebody who is...
really cool.
super awesome at everything that she does. No. You want somebody who is an accessible voice. Somebody who is assertive enough in any room can look a leader in the eye and say, that goal that you just put down there sounds really neat. But can you tell me why that's the most important thing and not this other thing? So somebody who can challenge leaders is really important. Somebody who is good at making sure that every voice in the room gets recognized. Really inclusive people, right? And then somebody who is very organized. Somebody who's like, not only am I helping you define these great goals, but I'm going to understand how they fit between you and this other team. How are your goals lining up? And then asking your challenging questions to make sure that they actually are working in concert with one another. Yeah. So it is a...
So to the borderline of obsessive compulsory...
You know... Order,
like, you do you love details?
I find the details are very important. At the same time, someone who's incredibly outcome focused, because you can get lost in the details, especially with something like OKRs. You can say, ooh, we didn't get every single checkbox on this report. That doesn't matter. No. Did you achieve your goal or not? You know, there. I've seen teams who have reached 70% of a goal in spite of themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, so that can happen too. So it's all about, did we work on this together? How did we do it together? And being somebody who is a, you know, again, this takes the growth mindset, right? Is like, I'm not great at this now. I'm sure that I can be. Somebody who comes in and says, I love to learn. I love to fall short. And then I love to figure out why. And then I love to do better the next time. That's really helpful too.
So, okay. So back to the OKRs. Mm. You have a quarterly sprint and then you revisit your objectives and you tweak on it and you go for a new sprint.
Yeah.
Do you have a yearly goal which are broken down into quarterly or biannually goals, or do you have different goals for each quarter?
So we did it a couple of ways. Depending on how far in the future can you see? Like, I think for smaller companies, sometimes it's harder to see that year in the future, right? You just know, this is my runway. This is as far as I need to get. But stretching yourself, really keeping your eyes on that horizon. What is it that you want to see? That's where aspiration really comes in with the OKRs. So what I would say again, look at how far you feel you can look in the future. And often ask yourself this, is that because that's what I can control? Push yourself beyond that. Say, okay, so how much farther can I stretch? What do I really want? And that's another, you know, quarter away, another 6 months away. So if you can have an annual objective that's broken down by quarterly milestones, you're welcome to do it in my world. Yeah. I find that the biannual model works really, really well because a 6 month horizon is just controllable enough and just aspirational enough, especially for companies that are growing, that you can do that with that quarterly check-in point and evolve a couple of things, and it's still really easy to manage.
Did you start with the quarterly and then evolve to the 6 month?
So, yeah, because I would say, and I'll just be really frank about this, but I think Cognite started using OKRs in that more rigid quarterly way, and teams were just ending up ignoring them because they weren't well connected, and it was like, oh, but I actually have all of this day-to-day firefighting that I have to do, and that's not the OKRs, and so why? So by creating this, we actually leveled it up, and we said the team OKRs, you know, if you feel mature enough to do an OKR as a team, run with it, but you don't have to. We actually kept them at a department level and a company level, especially in the last year. And that was fantastic because that was allowing people to bring the right voices in from the rooms. We also had something really interesting at Cognite that I haven't been able to sort of recreate yet, but I'm looking for other companies that want to do this. We actually required that one of the requirements for a sound OKR was that it required you to collaborate to achieve it. Yeah. So we would say, like, if you have this goal and it's entirely within your power to do it, that's not your goal. We need you to say, what is this that will, what does this enable us to do as a company? What is that objective that we will reach if we work across an aisle or through those doors with another team? And we would require that there's some sense of collaboration and dependency in order for it to be a good goal.
Hmm.
And that was really fun.
That's interesting. So could some departments like depend on each other? So the both departments are dependent on each other, or dependency just one way? So
it could be either.
Okay, yeah.
So we would have, you know, if the sales team had, you know, a goal, we would say, so what part of this relies on engineering?
Yeah.
And who are you going to work with?
Yeah.
And again, that's about your process setup, asking those good questions in advance. You have that touch point. It's an opportunity. You say, who do you need to work with in order to succeed? And if all of the people on their list are within a desk away from them, that's not enough. We need you to be moving healthfully across and looking for...
Why is that so important?
Because of siloing. And I would say that especially in our increasingly hybrid world, this is really a fear and a communication struggle. So if you have goals that connect well to a company objective, but they're sitting in different parts of the house and they're not interacting...
Then you will suboptimize.
You suboptimize. And you might achieve something as that department, but you will... unfortunately, see people who are moving in these directions and they have no connection to one another. That sets you up for failure later.
Yeah.
You need to be, it's about, you know, increasing the like security of your foundation. Do your teams know how to collaborate is going to be really important at some point. And if you've just got these goals that they're able to run at by themselves and they don't even know who to call, if something goes wrong, then you will hit a wall later that you can't overcome.
And it makes sense also on the company level. So if your department succeeds, but everyone else is, are failing, your company is not, it is failing, right?
Yes.
So,
if your engineering division is doing really awesome technological advancement, but it doesn't show up in a product that actually matters to a customer that's actually paid for by a, you know, it's like, well, then you've lost.
Yeah. So imagine the engineering have big parties because they're reaching the goals, but the company is going bankrupt.
Exactly. Yeah. And then like, this is where I think again about storytelling and leadership and communication. As a leader, helping every part of the organization know the part that they play and how important it is for an engineer who's deep, deep in R&D to understand why we're celebrating when a customer renews a subscription.
Yeah.
Like that, you can ignore that if you want to, but it is a lost opportunity and it will become a vulnerability for you later.
So let's talk a little bit about that. So, okay, so we've talked about missions and visions and now OKRs as a way to align and also execute.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing you mentioned now in terms of communication and call it... what we started with, like you started, you know, communication is the most important part of leadership. So how do you communicate? What is like, do you need to have the vision, mission and the way of execution set before you start to communicate and celebrate? And how do you do
that? So, yeah. So I think the thing to remember, like as we were talking about in the very beginning, so communication, it's not just what you say, it's what the other person hears and whether you're developing a clear understanding together. So that's communication. It's an ongoing becoming and we all do it all the time. Yeah. So as a skill, it's making sure that you're communicating about the right things at the right times, that you're including the right voices, et cetera. And what you celebrate is just one example of communication that leaders need to take responsibility for. And knowing when you're celebrating something, whether or not the people understand why they're celebrating. I've seen this happen where, you know, a customer, big customer signs, everybody's ringing bells on the sales side, but on the engineering side, what they see, what they hear when they hear, oh, a new big customer, the engineers are actually hearing, oh, now I'm going to be pulled off of the project that I've been working on. Now I'm going to have to develop something that I'm not ready for. It's not in our roadmap. We're giving things away. Like remembering that when you say, let's celebrate, sometimes people hear, my work just got 1,000% harder and I'm not being recognized for what I'm doing already. So for leaders to say to themselves, when I say this out loud, what do people hear? What an incredible exercise. And if you take time as a leader just to do that, I'm about to go out with a communication to the whole organization. I'm about to send this email to everybody. What will they hear? And putting yourself into the position of different people around the org, can you think of their face and their name? How does that person sitting at that desk, how will they receive this? Will they even open your email?
Yeah.
It's a thought exercise that I think not enough leaders do in reflection. And one of the ways that you can mitigate is to be the person who says, I'm going to send out this communication in writing, or I'm about to go out and talk about this. Before I do that, I'm going to float it with somebody. I'm going to bring somebody in who I don't always talk to. I'm going to bring that person in and just talk to them about this. How do they hear this?
Yeah.
And I think that those kind of proactive choices as a leader around communication can help so much in helping you to understand and have your perspective. Will this land with the people I'm talking to?
But aren't you then in danger of not being authentic? I mean, like, do you want to create a language which appeals to everyone or like in every touch point? And you know, then you will be like, what do you call it? The... I don't know if in English, but do you speak Norwegian?
Enough sometimes to understand.
Minst felles multiplum.
Like so, the lowest common denominator.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Won't your communication be a little bit bland and boring?
So that is the danger. And I always say when I'm doing communication coaching for individuals, I always say the best voice to work with is your own. Authenticity is something you can't buy. So you need to stick to yourself. At the same time, authenticity can come off as a real jerk.
Yeah.
So there is this, and this is the skill part. So you can say whatever you want, however you want, and be very authentic and no one will listen to you.
But I'm authentic.
You're incredibly authentic. You're all by yourself. Yeah. No one is following you. And a leader is defined by whether or not people follow, right? You are not a leader if no one's behind you. So if you want to achieve the outcome, I am leading people toward this destination, then you need to know whether or not your message and your authenticity is working. I'm not saying that people need to change their voice. In fact, it's a very hard thing to do. And you often do come off as bland and sort of like and forgettable. So you need to be compelling. And usually the most compelling version of yourself is yourself. That said, testing. taking your message and saying, I want to say, you know, we're not doing enough. Ooh, that's a tough message to tell people who are burning out. So maybe instead of saying we're not doing enough, what is the thing you're actually trying to achieve? I'm trying to achieve that people are working on the right things more efficiently next year.
Yeah.
Okay. So don't say we're not doing enough. Go talk to some people. Which version of the way that you say that will achieve the outcome that you want?
Yeah.
You can still be authentic, but you just know this is a more successful way to talk about that than this.
Okay. So you're speaking about, for example, so you're not doing enough is negative, right? And you're turning it into something positive.
Mm-hmm.
How do we work better?
Or how do we work better? Right? And I would also say, like, it depends on the arena, right? So you can, like, saying we are not doing enough, it sounds inherently negative. It could be true.
Yeah.
That might be a real tough medicine that everybody has to take.
Mm.
But is that going to actually result in the thing that you want?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that you have to sugarcoat the thing, but you need to say it in a way that people understand. So if you're speaking to somebody who's been underwater, burning out, pulled off of project after project, and you say, we're not doing enough.
Yeah.
They're going to, you know, stop listening to you or not even open your email in the first
place. How would you rewrite we're not doing enough?
I would ask that person. I would say, what is it? So I would say to them, we have not achieved our goals. And here you're sitting here in front of me and you look like if I give you one more thing, you're going to fall apart.
Yeah.
So talk to me. What could we have done differently this year so that we could have achieved the goal from your perspective? Listening, sitting back, because that person is not going to say we're not doing enough. They're going to give you a different answer. And it's probably,
what could that sound like?
We worked on the wrong thing. It could you changed that. That person might get real, real with you, but you moved the goal marker too many times. You brought in too many different clients. You asked me to write this for a whole new platform.
Okay. So you're putting the blame on yourself as a leader.
You're open to it.
Yeah.
You're saying, so what is it that we did in a leadership role that made you feel the way that you're feeling? Because either way, we acknowledge we didn't reach our goals.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So together you can collectively say we did or did not achieve our goals. That's objective.
Yeah.
But putting blame in places is going to put you in a sticky situation. Make sure that it's going to land with people who can have agency over their own workload.
So the message could be we're doing too much.
We're doing too much.
Yeah.
We're making too many changes. Yeah. We're not focused enough.
Yeah. And this is my responsibility as a leader.
As a leader, what could I have done differently? And you can totally hold people accountable and say, you know what? We didn't move fast enough in this collaboration over here. You can say that.
Yeah.
However, you need to own as a leader what you should have done first.
Ultimately, it's your responsibility as a leader.
I think
so
too.
To take responsibility for everything that's in the company.
Taking responsibility and then saying, like, how can we fix this together? Yeah. And also never, never, never put blame on somebody in a public forum.
No.
And if you're going to, have spoken to them in advance so they can, with agency, say, I'm taking this responsibility in my leadership capacity.
Yeah.
So again, coaching moments, if you're in hot water and you know that you need to communicate something, do some message testing and have somebody who's going to sit there and spar with you. And that can be an external communication coach like myself, or it can be somebody in your organization. I come from an internal communications background, and internal communication is something that can be really overlooked and boring and just sort of reactive. And it's somebody who's just, you know, writing up memos or putting together the intranet. It can actually be a really fun and exciting role, and somebody who's highly valuable in the organization because they're the ones who are in a horizontal capacity, understanding everything that's at play and can be the best sparring partner for leaders because their stake in the game is in the outcome only and not in what's being created or what's being sold or which partners you're using. That person's stake in the game is only whether or not the company succeeds.
Yeah.
So if you have someone in your organization who is doing internal communication stuff sort of on the side, or, you know, they become responsible for that by default, think of it, I would encourage you, think of it as a skill to be developed and an area that is an area of expertise that can really help your organization and maybe help that person invest more so that they can be that powerful partner to leaders who can help with this testing of messages or designing communication that actually will suit the occasion.
So how often should you communicate?
Well, I believe in constant and continuous communication, but depending on the size of your organization as a leader, if you're leading a small team, you want to be in constant communication with those folks and make sure that you're not in a micromanagement role, but rather in a feedback loop role where you're constantly asking for information as well as giving instruction, as well as asking, you know, interrogative questions. But for leaders in the in higher levels in an organization that's a bit larger, your visibility and accessibility is really important to your ability to succeed as a leader. So presenting opportunities to yourself to communicate on predictable levels, like quarterly all hands calls, that kind of thing. You should have those, but make sure that you know what you want to achieve with them and don't have it always be just you talking.
What do you want to achieve with them?
What do you want to achieve with a quarterly all hands call?
Or a monthly one.
Or a monthly one. So for me, and we did lots of different things at Cognite, and I've coached on this in different organizations, that the outcome for those can be different, but often it comes down to team unity, alignment behind goals. And this is where I use the OKR framework to help you have really fruitful quarterly calls, is that you're like, oh, here's where we are in terms of our goals. Let's tell some stories around this about what's working and what's not and whether something has changed. So it's goal alignment and it's accountability, but it's also giving face time to different people in the organization. So we used it very intentionally at Cognite, for example. We would do weekly for a long time, all hands calls that were more around team sharing. But then we would have these larger quarterly events that were connected to the OKR process. So trying to achieve two totally different things in those arenas, but you know what the outcome is that you want, and trying to engage with people, digging down deep into a company. If you have a larger company, looking for people who are doing something interesting and cool that aligns with your mission or demonstrates a value for your organization, and pulling them up, highlighting them and saying, this is a person who's working on this. Here's how it's helping us. Here's what they learned in this process. Here's how it demonstrates a value that we hold dear. That kind of storytelling is what people remember, and it allows them to feel like they're part of a team, even in sometimes a highly distributed format. They can feel like they know that person, they understand something about them when they've never even met in the hallways yet, because, you know, we went through a pandemic and then we never saw each other again.
How often should you celebrate?
Oh, I mean, so at different levels, different cadences. So you never want to go more than a month or two without a celebration at a team level, in my opinion. And it doesn't have to be big. It can be something small. But as a company, the bigger that you get, I mean, you should definitely have an annual time when you're all together and talking about celebrations. And at the same time, I would caution you, don't make the Yule board or like whatever that annual gathering is just about celebration. Always temper it with some lessons learned and some humility and some visionary stuff, because if it always feels like when you guys get together, all you do is talk about the good stuff, you start to get that fluff-o-meter going. And then it feels like a PR exercise. But it needs to actually feel like team unity. One ritual that we did that I loved, Elisa Senstal, who was my manager and mentor at Cognite for many years, introduced me to this idea. But at our annual, we would always do an individual high point from the year, low point from the year, and a lesson that they learned. And then we would map it onto a wall. We'd take sticky notes and we'd put them up onto the wall as a timeline. When did you have your high point? When did you have your low point? What was the lesson? And we'd give people a chance to walk around and read what people had written. And what that did was remind everybody, like, we've had a year. It was high and it was low. We became different or better along the way. And then to see that you were not alone in that, it's hugely helpful. And also to see sometimes clusters of high points. Why? Clusters of low points. Why did we all learn the same lesson around the same time? Really interesting insights to draw out. So the opportunity to celebrate can sometimes feel like, let's not talk about the bad stuff. For me, if you are a highly skilled communicator, you can actually do both. And it still comes off as a very positive exercise.
We've covered a lot.
Yeah, we have.
The final part, which we have covered also, is about culture.
Yeah.
So, is culture created by the sum of all of the things we have been talking about?
Mm. So, like the definition of culture being that idea of this shared set of beliefs and values and assumptions and standards and behaviors. Like I said, that happens whether you're paying attention to it or not. Your company has a culture, whether you invest in it, right?
Yeah.
I think of culture a bit as wildflowers. They're going to run wild. There's weeds, there's everything in this big meadow. If you put a trellis around it, you know, you're harnessing that organic growth. You can't have a top-down culture. It's always going to come from the ground up. But what structures can you set up so that it is healthy inherently and sets you up for success? I actually wrote down a John Doerr quote that I love. We've been talking about him a lot, the father of OKRs. But he said, a truly transformational team combines their ambitions to their passion and their purpose. And that's where you have this idea of the vision and the mission and the purpose and the why that inspires the goals, so that you can have this passion behind what you're trying to achieve and why, but also what are we doing today this executional piece.
Yeah.
When those two things are working in concert, that's like a trellis around these wildflowers that allows them to sort of grow in a way that is a bit more predictable. You can harness the natural energy of your teams toward a singular goal, and you can measure progress toward it. That gives you the chance to develop as teams and as leaders. It gives you the chance to celebrate things when they go right. It gives you a chance to learn something collectively when it goes wrong. And that's where culture shows up, is in your behaviors. How do you react to any of those moments? And as we said, you know, before, having a framework that gives leaders a chance to proactively set themselves up for success in those moments, because success in a moment when a goal is falling short, you're not throwing in the towel. The success in that moment is that you lean in there and either you make a change to the goal, a change to the team, a change to the leader, so that you can come out of it and do better the next time. Yeah. And so people need to not feel like they have to have a knee-jerk reaction in any moment. And when we're always fighting fires, then that's your culture. But if you give yourself a framework like a goal management framework, like OKRs, then you can set yourself up to have cultural touch points where you get to be the best version of yourself and act in a way that connects to vision, mission, and values. So for me, that's when I'm looking at culture and I think of communication as culture, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like how we are every day, that's our culture. But what are we doing intentionally to make sure that those interactions align with values that we want so that we can achieve the goals that we have for ourselves, so that we can eventually meet that mission and that vision that we've set out for ourselves in the beginning. And yes, it's all possible if you have not done that previously, if it wasn't part of your origin, you can retroactively do it. But like we said, don't do it top down. Engage the organization and use communication opportunities to have ownership around things like goals and around things like values, because people will feel like they are connected to it if they actually develop those things themselves and if they hear them and see them displayed over and over and over again.
Audrey Camp, it has been a really big pleasure having you in our podcast. Thank you so much for your insights. And I wish you all the best for the future. And I hope that you will sometime come back to this podcast and share some new insights.
I would absolutely love to. And I appreciate you having me on. Thank you to everybody who's listening, because this kind of a podcast is so important to your own personal development. Chalk it up. If you listen to this podcast, you're developing yourself as a person and as a professional. We sometimes forget to do that for ourselves. So thank you again for having me on, and I would love to come back sometime.